I started going through yesterday, and I said, this is what he was bothered by. And he says it so clearly, Richard Steinsaltz, that I want to, once we have this, it just will make things a little bit easier in terms of just understanding the flow. So it's all in Hebrew, so I'm just going to do a free translation of it. So he says that we all know that the Talmud, the Gemara, is an explanation of the Mishnah. But what is the point of this explanation? Like, what is it trying to do? Like, what is the Talmud's goal? So in order to understand the nature of the Talmud, we have to understand the idea of learning in general. Like, how do we understand our study as Jews? So he says that it's that we have to understand that Torah is not a book of laws. It's not a book of mitzvos. It's a big, you know, book of laws and commandments. That just, you know, tells us, here's what you need to do. These are the do's and the don'ts. That cannot be what it is. The truth is that what we're really trying to do in our pursuit of Torah is really to try to understand truth. Our goal in it really is about getting clarity and truth and understanding. Once you understand that, it changes how we understand it, because there's this adage, and again, I'm doing a very free. I'm like kind of jumping around in here, but I don't want you to think that any negative or any like thing that's lacking here is not Steinsaltz. It's me, but anything that's good at Steinsaltz has nothing to do with me. So, but the key point is, he says that when we understand that Torah is not a book of laws, but rather Torah is about a path to discovery of truth and our pursuit of truth, then we understand that our study of learning of Torah is, it's not, you know, like what you were, like what I think was one of the challenges of when you look at the Talmud and the Gemara, the way it flows, it's all over the place. And so where's the order? How do I get clarity here? Where's the clarity here? So what he basically says, though, is that if we understand, and it's funny that there's this, like, you know, when Hebrew in modern Hebrew, a lot of times they'll take an English word and they Hebrewize it, right? So those are the ones that get me every time. I'm like sitting there going, what is this word? What is this word? So the word that I got stuck on was associative in Hebrew. Can you imagine, like, trying to get that one down? You're just trying to read the Hebrew and then it's like associative. But the idea of the flow of the Talmud is that the law, the way it works is it takes associated ideas and it flows from there, and boom, 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 you go step, 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 step. So that we can go off, and we'll see today, we're going to be on another tangent. We started our whole pursuit of this by trying to understand what was the times for the Shema at night. When was the earliest time and when was the latest time, right? This is the context of our discussion. And then we go off on these tangents and we say, how did he get here? So he said, one of the principles we need to understand is that the way the Talmud flows is associative type of ideas. So that somehow point A will go to B to C and it will continue on in an association of ideas. Hopefully, we'll be able to keep it all together. Sometimes you have to do a chart and see the flow of the logic. But ultimately, what we need to understand about Torah study is that it is about looking for truth. So one of the things that we'll see many times in Talmud is that you'll have a Mishnah, and then the Mishnah, the first thing the Talmud will do is, who wrote this Mishnah? So, like, who cares? Like, why do we? It's so vital because we're trying to understand, where is this viewpoint coming from? So we're going to try to figure out. And many times in the Mishnah, we'll see that the person who's saying what they're saying is hidden from us. It just starts out and goes. And who is this person that is saying this idea? But ultimately, the goal of our study is always trying to find the truth. So what, you know, yes, it's important to know how do we do X, Y, and Z? How do we conduct ourselves? That's true. But more than that is always looking for the ultimate truth. And so that's what we see is the nature of the Talmud is that once you have that principle and you accept the fact that that's all we're trying to do here in Torah study is we're always pushing the needle further and further down to find what is true. And it's going to be on everything. It's not going to be just on what is the time for Shema but I want to understand bigger pictures. I want to see the truth of the world and the truth of what life is about, the meaning of life. And so everything is going to be revolving around that pursuit of truth. So once you understand that, and that's what the Talmud is really like structured, then things kind of make more sense in terms of, it's like we're all over the place, but what we're really trying to do is get to a place of understanding. Now that's just, there's more, maybe I'll, next time we'll go through background in terms of historical, the difference of between the study that was being done in the land of Israel as opposed to the study that was done out in basically which was today's modern Iraq is Babylon, and the different schools and things like that. He goes into that here, but let's get back to what our piece we're up to in Brachos. But I just wanted to share that idea quickly with you because once you understand that it's like this free for all. The truth is that Maimonides, his book of the Yad Chazaka, the Yad, we call it the four. It's Yad is the 14 books. His Yad Chazaka, which is his magnus opus of his law, that is structured in a very definitive way. It has, a system. Everything is very orderly. The way they study Rambam, Maimonides, in that case, is we always look at why did he put this here and that there? The idea of structure is everything in the study of the Rambam's book because that's all about structure. That's how he. That's different than how he. How we look at the Talmud. The Talmud is everything. It's the opposite. There is no definitive structure because, again, of this associative type of pathway, always looking for the truth. The other thing that he says as a side is that the Mishnah is has a lot of the laws. That when you look at the Mishnah, there might be two opinions or three opinions, but usually there you'll see the law. So you'll have how we do things, at least on a much more global level there. But then when we get into the Talmud, we might not figure out what the conclusion is many times, or we have to work very hard to figure out how exactly, because that's not the point here. The point is about getting a bigger understanding of things. Okay, so with
Jonathan,
that...
Hold on one second. So obviously somebody put it in this...
format.
In some order.
Mm-hmm.
So were they just listing them, or were they actually thinking about how they connected at that point.
So let me tell you another, this is not Rosh Steinsaltz, but this is an important idea, is that when Ravina Ravashi, who are given the credit for the ones who were the editors of the Talmud Bavli, of the Gemara, that's the Babylonian version, what they really, if you stop and you take a step back and you look at the structure, what they're really trying to do is teach us how to analyze and think. And with that, within the associative, it's like, I'm thinking about this, which brings me to this, which makes me, oh, by the way, I remember this. So it'll go all over the place. But again, where are we going? Why are we doing it this way? We're doing it because we want to figure out truths. We want to get strength. We want to get clarity on ideas. And that will lead me, it's a train of thought in a way, it leads us to so many different things that it takes us. It's almost like we're on a pursuit. We're pursuing truth, and in that pursuit, I will go off into tangents. What if you really stop and analyze it, you'll realize that they're always connected. It's not a free. It's not really that disjointed.
Jonathan, it's a uniquely Jewish thought.
Yeah.
Jewish mind.
Yeah. And it also trains us to analyze or to think a certain way. And what's interesting is that if you understand this, you'll start to see that even within a Rashi or Tosfot on the page, right? We talked about just to look at the page here, but on a page, so you'll have here, right on the inside. On the inside is Rashi, on the outside is Tosfos. When you look at the way they analyze, they're really like it's the same structure that was created by the Talmud itself, the Gemara, is being used by the next line of commentaries. And each one is doing the same thing. They have a certain way of, and it comes down to modern times. Like when you go into a yeshiva, yeah, there are different approaches, but they all, you know, some will have more of an analytical, some will be less analytical, but they're all analyzing and have a certain way of trying to understand and get to truth based on this structure that the Talmud Bavli set down. Whereas the Talmud Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, is very different. It's much more, doesn't have this back and forth as much. And that's why the Talmud Bavli became the thing, the go-to, so to speak, of how we study. So I'm going to bring up this the screen share here, okay? Let me just move this over here. Okay. What is that? Hold on a second. What's happening here? I don't know why it does that.
Hey, Hugh. Good morning, Hugh.
Hey, Bobby. How are you? Happy birthday. I missed your birthday. Sorry.
Thanks, brother.
All right. Hold on a second. Okay, fine. All right, here we go. So now, back to this discussion. So we were talking about, we've been up to, we talked about Ashrei. That was reason why Ashrei becomes this very powerful thing was two things. Was that it had in it the sentence about Poteach et yadecho ma'asbi al chalchai ratzon, the idea that God is providing us with all of our needs. That's the go-to sentence there. Very powerful sentence that we have to really think about and meditate on when we say Ashrei three times a day. And also that it was in the structure of the Hebrew alphabet, which we explained last week, was that the greatness, the importance of that factor is that God created the world with the Hebrew alphabet. And so that's basically the seeds of the structure of all of creation. So that when we say Ashrei three times a day and we follow the order of the Hebrew alphabet, we're tapping into, like, it takes us back to remembering that everything is built on God. He built this structure, and he did it through his utterances, and the utterances were based on the Hebrew alphabet as kind of the roots to all of creation. So when we say Ashrei, we're tapping into the fact that God is the provider. Poteach et yadecho ma'asbi al chalchai ratzon. He opens his hand and he provides for all that of one's needs. And number two is that it's structured with the Hebrew alphabet, which is the root of all of creation. Okay, so now let me get to here. Okay, so here over here we see Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. It's the end of 4b. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said, even though one recited Shema in the synagogue, it is a mitzvah to recite it upon his bed in fulfillment of the verse when you lie down. So Rabbi Yossi said, what verse alludes to the fact that one must recite Shema in the evening upon his bed as well? So there's a second sentence. There's a second verse. Tremble and do not sin. Say to your heart upon your bed and be still. Selah. So it's from the Psalms. So basically you have two, we had mentioned last time or two times ago, there were two opinions as to what's the structure of the prayer at night, Maariv. Do you say Shema and then the Shemona Esrei, or do you say the Shemona Esrei and then the Shema? Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi was of the opinion that you say Shemona Esrei and then you say Shema. We in practice say Shema and then Shemona Esrei, because we have this idea of that you're supposed to put the redemption before the recitation or the saying of the Amida of the Shemona Esrei. But Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said that the reason you would say, he holds that you say the Shemona Esrei and then you say the Shema, because you want to have Shema next to or samuch, connected to going to sleep. So the same Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says, okay, You said Shema even in synagogue. Great. You need to say it before you go to bed because it says in the Shema, B'shachbecha, when you lie down. So therefore, you should say it before you go to sleep, regardless if you already had said it earlier. But then, and then an additional idea is that there is also this verse from the Psalms that says, tremble and do not sin, say to your heart upon your bed and be still. Selah. So this is understood to mean, recite Shema upon which is written on your hearts, upon your bed, and afterward be still and sleep. Okay, so with regard to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's statement, Rav Nachman said, so now you see this idea. So, okay, so we have this idea. So even though we end up in practice, like the other opinion that was, that you say Shema in the synagogue before you want to say redemption, which is Shema, the law, the idea of Shema and then Shemona Esrei, when you get to your bed, before you go to bed, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's ideas, you say the Shema again. There's this idea of, like we said, we gave the analogy of like you're logging off. Like you log in the morning, say Shema. You're going to sleep, you log off, you say Shema again. Hear, O Israel. So now, within this idea, with regard to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's statement, Rav Nachman said, if one is a Torah scholar, he need not recite Shema on his bed. And why is that? So anything that's bolded is the actual text of the Gemara. The stuff in the lighter font is commentary, which is actually incorporating Rashi's view here. Recite Shema on his bed, since he is always engaged in the study of Torah, and he will likely fall asleep engrossed in matters of Torah. So it's interesting. According to the way Rashi's understanding is, so why is it that a Torah scholar does not need to say Shema again? Is because he's so connected that he doesn't need to say the Shema again before he logs off. He's okay. Like, he's just in, he's in the groove, he's connected. So therefore, there's no need to say the Shema again. Abai said, no, even a Torah scholar must recite at least one verse of prayer, such as, into your hand I trust my spirit. You have redeemed me, Lord, God of truth. So it's interesting. So you see that Rav Nachman's saying, Torah scholar, it's not necessary. But he says, no, I don't care who you are. You're still required to recite at least one verse of prayer, right? Because he's saying almost like to this idea that you're connected, but there's this different thing that needs to be accomplished here. And so therefore, Abai is saying, even so, you still have to recite at least one verse of prayer. It's interesting. It says one verse of prayer. I'm curious to see how we would understand. Let's just look that up. Let me see if there's any...
I'm more curious to understand. So a Torah scholar, so I'm studying Torah right now. I would never say I'm a Torah scholar, but who's to define what a Torah scholar is? I mean, by definition, a Torah scholar wouldn't say they're a Torah scholar because they're a humble kind of guy. So they would say, oh no, I'm not enough of a Torah scholar to not recite this before I go to bed. By definition.
So you want to know, how do you figure out if you're a Torah scholar or not?
to me, a Torah scholar would never say, I'm enough of a scholar not to do this. Just by definition of how the Mishnah describes Torah scholars, such a humble being.
So let me ask you a question. Can you guys see where my pointer is? Can you see that? Can you see the screen, or it's not coming up?
It's not.
I don't see it.
Okay, I know what I have to do here. Hold on, I'm gonna do a different screen. I'm gonna do another screen share. Hold on.
Isn't there also something called the bedtime Shema?
Yeah, well, that's what we're talking about. So this is exactly what we're. This is. This Talmud piece right here is talking about this issue. Okay, so now you can see this. Can you see my where my pointer is?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you this. Let me explain to you. So this is the what we're doing now. Just as an aside, this is the analysis part. We have a Talmudic piece where we have two. Let's bring this. Oh, why isn't that? Okay, here we go. We have two ideas, okay? Rav Nachman's coming and saying, with regard to Rabbi Yeshua Ben Levi's statement. He said, if one is a Torah scholar, he need not recite Shema on his bed, since he is engaged, right? So Rav Nachman's point is, the issue is, are you connected or not? Okay? Comes along Abaye, and he says something different. Abaye says, even a Torah scholar must recite at least one verse of prayer. Why? Why is that? Is that, like, so Abaye is coming to, that's not the issue. You, Rav Nachman, you're saying that it's an issue of being connected. Abaye is saying something different. He says, even a Torah scholar must recite at least one verse. Into your hand I trust my spirit. What do you think he's saying, Abaye? What would you say?
I think he's saying that, I mean, if you're a Torah scholar, you could be all over the place. There's a lot of Torah to be learning and thinking about. So maybe here it's a very specific thought about that it's about our connection to God specifically, and that he, you know, I it's all about my relationship and trust in God at the end of the day.
Okay, you know, but listen to,
I think,
okay,
I think
Hugh.
About humility.
Humility.
Yes.
I
don't care if you think you're so smart and you're so connected, you don't have to do something. I think it's a reminder of the fact, I think it's reminding you that even though you have done all this Torah scholar and study all day long, you still have an obligation to fulfill this commandment. I think it's about, like, so you don't get so big in your head. So,
okay, so you want to say it's a humility issue. Okay, interesting. Anybody?
Yeah, Amy wants to say something.
Okay.
Hi, guys. Sorry to interrupt, but I'm sitting here. I think it's about the underlying reason why you say the first guy said you have to do it, Nachman, that it's about connection. But really, it seems that it's about the next phase you're going into, because if the first thing you say when you wake up is thank you for putting my soul back in my body. That statement that you made, I put my soul in your hands, connected to that phase of where you're going.
Right. Okay. So good. So you're saying, let's take it the next step. So Abaye is saying, into your hand, I trust my spirit, like you're saying. So what's the issue? So you wanted to say it's humility. You're saying it's something else. What is it?
Well, I'm saying it's the association theory that you're bringing up, is that this statement isn't so much associated with that need for connection, the logging on and the logging off. It's associated with the fact that now your soul is going to leave your body, and it's associated with what you're going to say in the morning when you wake up.
Okay, what are we worried about? I mean, you're saying into your hand, I trust my spirit. So let me tell you what the Chidushi Agadot here, it says in Hebrew. I wish it had in English. Sometimes in the Sapphire stuff, it has translation. Some it doesn't. Okay, so I'll explain to you what he says here, which is basically taking that idea, Amy, and just extending it. He says, Lefi mashmo rogez miloshen kaas hu hefet. No, that's not it. Wrong one. Where is it? Yeah, no, it's in this thing. Okay. Where is it? It's this idea. I don't think he even says it, but someone else said it. Okay. The idea of protection, right? So I'm looking to be protected, right? I'm going into this very vulnerable state. So Hugh said about humility. You're talking about this idea of I'm trusting my spirit. Abaye is, like you said, it's nothing to do with logging in or logging off as much as I want protection. Right, so therefore what? That's why Abaye says, I don't care if you're a Torah scholar. There's nothing to do with being connected. This has something to do with being connected, right? It has to do with being protected. Protected, connected, right? So one's protected, one is already, and it's an issue of protection, and therefore Abaye is saying, even if you're connected, it doesn't matter, because I need protection. Into your hand I trust my spirit. You have redeemed me, Lord God of truth. So that's why I would, so again, all this is coming back to the start. We said, even though one recited Shema in synagogue, it's a mitzvah to recite upon his bed in fulfillment of the verse, etc., till when you lie down. comes along, Rav Nachman says, well, not necessarily. If I'm a Talmud Chacham, if I'm a person that's connected within my Torah, I'm connected. I don't need to log off. Abaye says, nothing to do with being connected. It has to do with protection. And if that's the case, then I got to say Shema regardless. It's like what he, like you, right? So it's interesting because it is a function of humility. And at the same time, like what Amy's saying, is that it's an issue of being very much in a state of needing protection, right? We're totally in a vulnerable state. Okay? So now, continues the Gemara, incidental to this, to the first. Yeah?
Is it really protection, or is it more like and I can't see the words now, but hey, look, you know what? At some point, you will be on your deathbed at some point. Things will be falling apart. Like life is full of challenges, and you better get used to the fact that I don't know if it's protection or just look. You better trust in me because I've done everything for you so far. There's one supreme being that you need to just put your trust in.
Because
you will, even a Torah scholar, will confront challenges that might be too heavy for them to handle. They will inevitably face something.
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of loss, some sort of problem, some sort of... We're all headed on the same road where there will be... built into the system. You're going to have a challenge at some point that's very big, and even a Torah scholar better have it embedded in their head that I'll trust in you. Because even a Torah scholar, when those things hit them, can say, oh, I did all this studying, all this mitzvah, and this is what I get? You know, I'm done with it. They're all going to face something big.
Uh huh. So you're saying it's more. You would go to your. So let's say. So you're saying now, and you tell me if I got it. Is that the practice of saying the Shema before going to sleep is an exercise of preparation, or a necessary exercise that one needs to do no matter where you are in terms of this your connection. It to the ultimate connection, which is I need to be in tune, in sync with God. The ultimate, I have to be connected to God, because that ultimately is the connection that one needs to have, no matter who you are, where you're at. This is the point of everything, is to be that, have that connection. Would that sound along?
Yeah, I think that right. Better have embedded into you, into your hand, I trust my spirit. Because mm-hmm. at some point, things will happen. You will be at the point where you're not going to be sure if you're going to get another breath.
Okay. All right. And, so you're
it can collapse awfully quickly in terms of your faith structure, unless it's embedded. Like I trust in you. Like okay.
Okay.
It's like a fire drill.
Okay, so you're saying it's something that we have to actively prepare ourselves to be ready. So this is a prep. You're saying this is an active preparation. Fine. So now just so we know, at this point we're saying and this is again to what we spoke about earlier, that when we look at this study here, this is the Talmud at its best. We have two to three different viewpoints, and I would venture to say that all are true. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chayim. Let me say, when we have multiple opinions within a piece here, not one nullifies the other. If anything, I want to bring all of them in and say each one is important, and it creates a bigger picture. So I need to log in and log off. I need to be cognizant of my vulnerability. I have to be humble. I want to entrust my soul to God. And I also want to be doing that in a practice on a nightly basis to be prepared, because that's really where it's going to go to anyway at the end of the days. So I want to be always in that process of preparing. So all these things are connected, and all these are truths that you have. Rav Nachman's opinion, you have Abaye saying, I don't care who you are, you still got to be plugged in. You know, you got still got to, you know, recognize your vulnerability and put your trust in God, and etc. So you see all these things that are, it's, you see like the bigger picture, like you see that they're laying out the multiplicity of the concept that is Shema before you go to sleep, Eric, right? And, right, the Shema that we do at night, that's what it, we have these different factors that are going into play. And I think that they're all true. And that's what the Gemara is telling us. Okay, so now, incidental to the verse, tremble to, and do not sin, the Gemara mentions that Rabbi Levi Bar Chama said that Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish said, one should always recite his good, incite his good inclination against his evil inclination. Then one must constantly struggle so that his evil inclination does not lead him to transgression. As it is stated, tremble and do not sin. Now, how do we get here? So again, the verse that was quoted by Rabbi Yossi, okay, Rabbi Yossi quoted this pasuk, this verse from Psalms, tremble and do not sin. So now we're going to start focusing in on that line, that verse, okay? And that's how we got here. Just to keep track at home, like how do we get here? Associative, right? So we're taking a verse that we had from Rav Yossi, and now we're going to go into that verse. Let's understand it. So the idea of Rigzuv al techdom, tremble and do not sin, teaches us this, or we bring in this teaching from Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Now, just as a side, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, a lot of times called Reish Lakish in the Talmud, is the brother-in-law of Rav Yochanan. The story was that Shimon ben Lakish was a marauder. He was a armed robber. He was the leader of the armed robbers. And one day he came to a water hole, and he sees this gorgeous woman, or at least he thought it was, and he's taken, and he jumps in, only to find out that it's Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan was unbelievably handsome, and so Rav Yochanan said to him, if you are willing to turn your life around and come with me and become a Torah scholar, I have a sister that's even better looking than I am, and I will marry you off to my sister. And so it happened. Rav Shimon ben Lakish became Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, and he became the study partner of Rav Yochanan. So here you have this, you know, to understand the background of who Rav Shimon ben Lakish is, now listen to what he's saying. One should always incite his good inclination against his evil inclination. Then one must constantly struggle so that his evil inclination does not lead him to transgression. As is stated, tremble and do not sin. So it's just interesting that the teaching here is someone that once upon a time was the king of the underworld, so to speak, and here he's teaching us this lesson, which is so, you know, it's always interesting to see the background of who's teaching us what. And then he goes on and says, if one succeeds and subdues his evil inclination, excellent, but if he does not succeed in subduing it, he should study Torah, as alluded to in the verse, sate your heart. If he subdues his evil inclination, excellent, if not, he should recite Shema, which contains the acceptance of the yoke of God, and the concept of reward and punishment that is stated in the verse, upon your bed, which alludes to Shema, where it is said, when you lie down. If he subdues his evil inclination, excellent. If not, he should remind himself of the day of death, whose silence is alluded to in the continuation of the verse, and be still, Selah. Now, what is so incredible about this is that before we even looked at this teaching of Reish Lakish, we, on our own, set all these ideas in understanding the machlokas of Nachman and Abaye as to why you say Shema before you go to bed. Think about it, right? So here we just said one has to be, connected or not connected. We have to understand our frailties and be connected to God. In this teaching, it really addresses these things as well, right? Think about it. One should always incite his good inclination against his evil inclination, as it stated, tremble, do not sin. If one subdues, excellent. If not, study Torah. If he subdues it, excellent. If not, he should recite the Shema, because of it reminds us of reward and punishment, of the yoke of God. Right? It puts us into that frame of mind of recognizing the fact that ultimately that's we're going to have to account for everything that we've done, and also be connected to God. And also this idea of, right, again, this idea of the day of death, like you said, Steve, right? So whose silence is alluded to in the command, right? So it's in the continuation of the verse, and be still. So you saw, like, all you each brought out these ideas that comes in this next teaching of Reish Lakish. And you see, again, the connection between one thing and the next, okay? So now Rav Levi Bar Chama said that Rav Shimon Lakish, again, said, God said to Moses, ascend to me on the mountain and be there, and I will give you the stone tablets and the Torah and the mitzvah that I have written, that you may teach them. Meaning that God revealed to Moses not only the written Torah, but all of Torah, as it would be transmitted through the generations. The tablets are the Ten Commandments that were written on the tablets of the covenant. The Torah is the five books of Moses. The mitzvah is the Mishnah, which includes explanations of the mitzvot and how they are to be performed. That I have written refers to the prophets and writings written with divine inspiration. That you may teach them refers to the Talmud, which explains the Mishnah. These explanations are the foundation for the ruling of practical halacha. This verse teaches that all aspects of Torah were given to Moses from Sinai. So, it's interesting, again, continuation of an association here. I think it's teaching us something that, again, the connection here is that you had a teaching from Rav Shimon ben Lakish, and so therefore it takes me to the next thing of a teaching of Rav Shimon ben Lakish. Right, that's really the connection here. One leads to the next. I have a teaching from him. I'm going to tell you another teaching of his. But what it's just interesting for our purposes of how exactly we understand the Torah Shebaal Peh. How do we understand the oral tradition? So in this here, we have a teaching here that tells us a little bit about that. The Rambam Maimonides, in his intro to Mishnah, describes how exactly did Moses get the Torah? And he basically explains there that God taught Moses a law, and he gave him it to write down. He dictated to him what to write down, but that part of it was not written down, but was given over verbally. Then in turn, Moses would sit down with Aaron, his brother. He would teach Aaron that law. And then he would bring in two of Aaron's sons. They would go over it again. And then they'd bring in the elders, the Zakenim, and they would teach them. And then Moses would go out, and then Aaron would teach. And you'd have this succession of, like, things being reviewed four times. Moses taught it four times, and then Aaron taught it another three times, which, again, each person had the transmission to get a total of four times. But the idea was is that you had a structure of written, and connected to that, you'd have an oral part of the tradition, that it was necessary to have both being, you know, like it was a parallel Torah to the written. And so you have this here. You see this in this idea that the tablets were the Ten Commandments, the Torah is the five books, that's the written. And then the mitzvah and the, is talking about the idea of the Mishnah, of the oral tradition, how they are to be performed. But there's this whole extra part of what we have, and that I've written, that's going to end up being the prophets and the writings, and that you may teach them refers to the Talmud. So you see this idea of, and this is all transmitted at Moses, given to Moses from Sinai. Now, does that mean that all the five books were given to Moses at Sinai? I believe that that's not the case. that the idea was that over the course of the 40 years of the Jews being in the desert, that God transmitted to Moses the five books in its totality. But I guess the way that we'd understand this part of what the Gemara is saying here is that everything, the whole corpus was somehow transmitted at Sinai. All the details, everything. Now, how exactly that, you know, what it, it does it mean that every detail, or is the kernels of the roots of everything, you know, how exactly we understand that? That's something that would, I think that we'd have to think about a little bit more to just to understand exactly, you know, but it definitely the underpinnings of it all are given over at Sinai to Moses. Okay, next. Now back to our subject at hand, which is the Shema at night before you go to sleep. The Gemara continues so it's almost here. So we go a little bit off Reish Lakish's teachings, and now we circle back, right? So comes Rabbi Yitzchak. The Gemara continues it right and says, anyone who recites Shema on his bed, it is as if he holds a double-edged sword guarding him from all evil. As is stated, high praises of God in their mouths and a double-edged sword in their hands. Another verse from the Psalms. The Gemara asks, from where is it inferred that this verse from Psalms refers to the recitation of Shema? Like, how did you get there? It says high praises of God in their mouths and a double-edged sword in their hands. So Marzutra and some say Rav Ashi said, we derive it from the preceding verse that is written, let the pious exult in glory, let them joyously sing upon their beds. The praise of God from one's bed is the recitation of Shema. And then it says, and is written thereafter, high praise of God in their mouths and a double-edged sword in their hands. So according to this idea, so Rav Yitzchak is bringing home the idea that we're talking about protection. Then when a person says Shema at night, it's about protection, right? And then additionally, and Rav Yitzchak said, anyone who recites Shema upon his bed, demons stay away from him. This is alluded to, as it stated. But man is born into trouble, and the sparks of Resha fly upward. The verse is explained, the word fly, of, means nothing other than Torah. As Torah is difficult to grasp and easy to lose, like something that floats away, as it is stated, will you set your eyes upon it? It is gone. For riches certainly make themselves wings, like an eagle that flies into the heaven. The word sparks mean nothing other than demons. As it stated, wasting of hunger and the devouring of the sparks and bitter destruction. And the teeth of the beast I will send upon them with the venom of crawling things of the dust. Here we see that Reshef listed along with Tamiri, both of which are understood by the sages to be names of demons. Okay. So there's a lot of discussion of in Brachos in general. We see in the Talmud a lot of discussion about demons. Today we, you know, like about 100 years ago, we have the story of the Chavetz Chaim. We have this idea of the Dybbuk, the idea of demons. So even by the Maimonides' time already discussing that demons really like just don't apply anymore. But you see this idea of, you could say demons more, you know, people have, you know, fears, let's say. So this idea of the fears can be suspended by the idea of saying Shema upon his bed, that again, you have protection. So this idea of Rav Yitzchak seems to be going in line with Abaye, right? Because Abaye said earlier, right? What was Abaye's teaching? Abaye said, even a Torah scholar must recite at least one verse of the prayer along these lines of what Rav Yitzchak is saying here, that when you say the Shema on his bed, as if he holds a double-edged sword guarding him from all evil. Okay, so this idea of protection. Okay. Once we're in this idea of protection, so then Rav Shimon Lakish again comes, and we have his teaching, if one engages in Torah study, suffering stays away from him. As is stated, and the sparks fly upward. The fly means nothing other than Torah. And as is stated, will you set your eyes upon it? It is gone, and the sparks means nothing other than suffering. As is stated, wasting of hunger and devouring of the sparks. Equating devouring sparks with wasting hunger, as both of are types of suffering. From here, we derive that through Torah, fly, one is able to distance himself upward from suffering sparks. Okay? So this idea of the Torah has an ability to protect us from difficulties, from oppressive, from suffering. So again, it's an interesting idea, but we see the, you know, like you're looking for points of connection. The Shema night protects us from the demons or from difficulties. And in general, one should know that when the study of Torah protects someone, that Yisurim B'dilin Heimenu, right? So that when if one engages in Torah study, the suffering stays away from him. Okay, so interesting idea. And then...
But that strikes me as like a little, almost like superstitious or...
Concrete.
I wore rosary beads or...
Right, so but think, so let's so think about this. So,
man type thing. And
it, okay, so...
Really, it doesn't comport with my own observations of how the world operates, whether it be from, you know, I'm sure, you know, there have been plenty of victims of either disease or Holocaust that have, that like I just don't see it.
Right, so
like that line of reasoning wouldn't be one that, you know.
That's a good question. So let's understand this, right? How do we understand when it says here that Yisurim B'dilin Himenu, right? That if one engages in Torah study, suffering stays away from him. Like you just said, there's Holocaust, there's COVID-19.
Right.
Doesn't seem to discriminate. You know, there are a lot of rabbis going down right now. So I mean, it's not. So how do we understand this? So I think if we. First and foremost, it's not a magical thing, right? So we're not saying, I learned Torah, I can do anything reckless. This is all in context. It's always important to understand every teaching is contextual. So the context of this would be, understand. The Torah understands that one cannot put themselves in a spot of, like, you can't put yourself into dangerous situations. Perfect example is here. In a case of where they understood At a certain point, it's dangerous to be in a setting where you're going to be with a lot of people. You can't go and pray. That's so. I don't care. You study a lot of Torah. It does not going to protect you from the dangerous setting. You know, you can't put yourself into dangerous situations. So if there are dangerous situations, it's not like a miraculous thing that you learn Torah. You're like you're shielded. It doesn't work that way. So Rav Shimon Lakish is not saying that. You learn Torah, and all of a sudden you're going to have miracles happening. That's not what his teaching is. So what he, right? So that's important, right? So like you're 100%, your reaction is correct. That's not what he's saying. But let's say contextually, if we take the teaching that comes before with Rav Yitzhak, Mazikim Bedilin Himenu, demons are going away. Notice the word Bedilin again is that they're separated. Here, Yisur Bedilin Himenu is that the idea that when your person is connected to Torah, it's going to give you a certain equilibrium, okay? And so that difficulties or suffering stays away from him, it means it's going to give you a certain ability to deal with difficulties so that you're going to be more balanced if you're connected properly. I think that Kol HaOsek B'Torah Yisurim B'Dilin Himenu, one who's involved in engaged in Torah study, suffering stays away from him means that there might be difficulties. How do you deal with it or how you're going to react to those things are going to be dependent on what's your makeup, right? So if you're a person that is involved in the Torah study, that it gives you an ability to cope, right? And how you deal with these things, I think that's what it means, right? It doesn't mean that you're all of a sudden going to be, you know, Captain America with a shield. And, you know, that's not what it's saying, you know? Although I could see why we would, you know. But again, the idea of a person that's, you know, involved in Torah study, how that's going to help them deal with the difficulties, that I think is more of it, of what it's saying. It's going to be dealing is like, it's going to, you know, you're going to be able to cope or to, you know, work through those issues. It'll be much more, much easier for one to handle. Hold on one second.
Jonathan, I also think that it's not saying here that you're not going to have any challenges or pain or whatever. Suffering tends to be something that it's a mental thing that you relive, or it's like you mentioned, it's a lens you view things through.
And I think here it's saying that if you're studying Torah and you're involved with it, that you're trained and you stay away from your own why me type scenarios in terms of how you're dealing with your own situations. So I think it's more, as you mentioned, I think it's a mental piece, but also, you know, I mean, we're looking at it through a physical lens. There's also a spirituality here, which is that by studying Torah, that our focus in life is different than maybe someone who doesn't.
Right. No, for sure. So that's, I think that's 100%. So I would never say that this is some kind of miraculous, not at all. Not at all. I would say that's exactly, it's giving us the means or the tools, like you said, to be able to really deal with these things. Hold on one second here. What was it? They can't hear you.
Julie now wants to use the Jewish Journeys link.
Okay.
She wasn't supposed to. Now she wants to use it. It's all set up.
Okay.
I have to get started.
So go upstairs, get on the thing, and just start.
But how are we going to do our count?
Slug
Jonathan's getting additional counsel.
It's the Bergen.
Jewish Journey. Right, it's a password.
The Torah.
Yeah, I thought those words were his. Apparently, he's getting a.
No. I just we have Jewish Journeys. Julie's Farkas is giving a class, and I set up the link for that. And now I'm being asked how exactly to access it. So that's all. Whatever it is. Okay. So I guess we'll stop here. Any other questions, comments?
That was a good explanation. You know, when it says warlock demons, you know, I'm thinking like, oh, is that like warding off the coronavirus or whatever? You know, like that's almost like a demon. But the way you explained it, it's more like, oh no, wards off your own internal demons.
Right. So I'll tell you something interesting is that the idea of, let's say, which has become popular, like a red string, the red bendel, that kind of stuff. So like, when you read through the Gemara, there's just no way. There's no way that the Gemara would ever, like these types of, like, it doesn't work that way. We are about, this is the most important thing. We had this before, we kind of ran through the Gemara there, but we had it a little bit where we see that, like, for example, Jacob or Abraham, that they were nervous about lacking protection. And so the Gemara says, I don't understand, like, you know, God promised them that they were going to be taken care of. So what are they worried about? And the Gemara basically answers is that they were worried because they felt that they had done certain things that made them no longer worthy. So the idea that, in general, one should not be walking around, you know, scared, okay? We're not like that. But the idea that we should always be questioning and saying to ourselves, you know, there's no, like, I learned Torah, so therefore I can jump in front of cars. I mean, no, you can't do reckless things. It doesn't work that way. It's not what we're saying. But that when we are connected to God, there is this, I mean, there's an incredible teaching that this is a very important idea. And there is something to it, you know, again, everything's contextual. Like, we can't, but this is, you know, to show, like, the balance. It says that the Brisker Rav Salvechik, Rav Yosef Salvechik, that was, you know, connected with Yeshiva University. So his grandfather, Hi.
Yeah.
One second. Let me get everybody. There's a new link. I knew I should have done this. All right, so that's Eric. I got Eric. Let me get Bob. I gotta get another account then. Okay. So Soloveitchik's grandfather, the Briskarov. So there's this idea. This is a very real idea. This is not a Red Bendel type of deal. Basically, the idea is that we say Ein Od Milvado. Ein Od Milvado translates, there is nothing else but God. Ein Od, nothing else, Bilvado, except for him. So the Briskarov had a tradition that if you're in a spot and you're like in danger and you meditate on that, but like legitimately you are meditating that there's nothing else but God, Ein Od Milvado, that you will have tremendous protection. Again, we never put ourselves in danger. The Nishmartem in Asher Sechem Od, it says in the Torah that a person has to protect their lives to the extreme. The idea of sanctity of life and protecting life is the highest mitzvah. It's the most important thing that we do, to the point of where, let's say, for example, Shabbos, any rules of Shabbos go out the window when it comes to saving a life. Also, we can't put ourselves into dangerous things. We can't, put ourselves, like, you can't jump off, you can't do, you understand, it's understood. You can't put yourself, exactly, okay? But if you're in a dangerous situation, like for example, the stories are of where they're in, during the Holocaust, there were these crazy situations. So they tell the Briskarov and his family, this is the meditation, Ein Od Milvado. All you can think about now is there's nothing but God. And that they were on trains where the Nazis were hunting down the Jews, and miraculously they were never bothered, and they were able to get out using this principle. But not like to play with it, because that's what they were focused in, completely meditating on this idea. So I've heard like stories of friends. A friend of mine, his wife was giving birth, and the umbilical cord was wrapped around the child's neck, and it looked bad, and the guy just started meditating on this idea, and miraculously the baby came out without a problem. So it's not a game, it's not a gimmick. It's like when you're really connected, when you're in that zone, when you're completely connected to God, then and it's sincere, that's the real protection. So that's not some kind of hocus pocus. That's like we were saying earlier, the idea of like when you say Shema at night and you're like getting yourself, like you want to say, Steve, about this idea of getting oneself ready or always being connected in that way, because ultimately the end of days, like we're going to be going to that place of God, connecting and being in that world of God. So the Shema at night, when meditating and saying God is one, and that oneness and connecting to that. So when you're doing, so you're in that mode, in that plane of, in that sphere. So that's protection, because you're connecting to the ultimate reality, to the ultimate truth. So that's something that's very powerful. So all these other things, there's no easy, it's not an easy thing, but when it's sincere, it's legit. It's the real deal. I think that's the answer. Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
So, thank you, sir. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Have a great day, a healthy and a prosperous week, and we should hear good news that life should at least get back to being semi-normal.
at least a step closer.
Exactly. We should all be enjoying. Listen, there's some great things there's a silver lining in this cloud, So, we should enjoy our time with our family and our loved ones. And it should be, we should be able to look back and smile and say, wow, what a special time. It wasn't all bad.
Jonathan, one of the points about you're just making about our health above all else.
Yes. I mean,
just look at coronavirus and the fact that synagogues were shut down and Jews are praying from home because life is above all, right?
Yeah. So I want to tell you something. This is just a cute little idea. When a person says Shema, when they're by themselves, we start it by saying Kel El Melech Ne'aman. Kel, God, is Melech. He's the king. That's Ne'aman. He's reliable. So why would you just say it only when you're on your own? So I must say, like, when you're by yourself, to have that extra reminder, you're about to say Shema, right? We have to, like, connect to God, right? But, like, no, I'm here by myself. God is reliable. I have nothing to worry about because I can rely on the most reliable thing, period, which is God. When do I say that? When I'm by myself. When I'm with the, with the group, then the added three words are Hashem Elokeichem Emes. God is the God of truth. But when I'm on my own, I know one thing: Kel Melech Ne'aman. God is reliable. He's with us, and we can always rely on that. We can take that to the bank, as they say.
All right.